everyone. Welcome back. And thanks for listening to the Adulting is Easy podcast, where we make adulting easier by making money easier. This is your host, Lauren. And I'm joined today by Cody Garrett, CFP. He's an advice-only financial planner and educator, passionate about helping DIY investors on the path to financial independence and early retirement. As the owner of Measure Twice brand, he specializes in comprehensive financial plan development and personalized education to help families implement their own well-informed decisions. Cody shares his comprehensive financial planning process and beyond the basics education at measuretwicemoney.com. His insights have been featured by Barron's, Forbes, Fox Business, CNBC, Morning Brew, Business Insider, and Market Watch. You can also hear him on the Choose FI, the Longview Morningstar podcast, and the Boggleheads Investing podcast. Thanks for joining me, Cody.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad to be here, Lauren.
Let's make adulting easier for listeners by discussing a personal finance topic, since managing money is a big part of adulting. Let's talk about personal finance. We could probably see where we're going by your bio. But I got to start, though. Like, what's a CFP?
So a CFP, I know there's a lot of alphabet soup in the financial industry, right? You know, like CFA, which is Chick-fil-A. No, you know, that's Chartered Financial Analyst. We have CPAs, you know, certified, whatever the, I don't even know all these have these things. So at least public accountants and CFAs, CFP, EA. So yeah, CFP is another alphabet soup, which is Certified Financial Planner. It is a professional designation. It's not like a legal designation. It's a kind of a nonprofit created this professional designation for people who want to go really beyond the basics and do comprehensive financial planning.
Yep. Perfect. How do you, what goes into that?
So they do what they call the four E's. So the CFP board, first you go through education. Most people, this is typically 9 to 12 months of education, really drinking out of a fire hose, like learning way more than you ever thought about everything personal finance. Then there, you have to take an exam. The exam is 6 hours long, 170 multiple choice questions where, two of the answers feel right, but there's one that's a little bit more right than the other. Then there's the experience. It's usually between 2 and 3 years of experience required, depending on what type of work you're doing with clients financial planning wise, and also ethics, which is a background check, and then signing that you'll be an ethical financial planner along the way as a fiduciary.
Yeah, I don't know if you would know this, but I did the Boston University graduate certificate,
the BIF program or something,
in financial planning. So I did do that. I think it took me more than 9 to 12 months because I was working full time, and I just did it to beef up my knowledge so I could ask better questions for Adulting is Easy. I wasn't really trying to become a CFP, but man, there's a lot in that. I was thinking about the people that are taking the test on this stuff, and I'm like, I don't know how you could do it. There's a lot of nitty gritty information in that.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's kind of deep, but super wide. It's like, imagine if you were to, in school, when you took, U.S. history, you'd be tested on just a portion of history, a few presidents worth of history. This is like being tested on Genghis Khan through, the current administration or something. So
it is like that.
It's a lot. Yeah. And as soon as you take the exam, all of it falls back out of your head because you probably utilize only 30% of what you learn.
For sure. I still have my books. So I'm like, okay, I can reference them if I ever need to. So who needs a CFP?
So, do you mean on the financial advisor side or on the consumer side?
Yeah, on the consumer side.
Sure. Like in terms of who should hire a certified financial planner, I think about financial planning as a bridge. So kind of everybody imagine here, if you're listening, this bridge between two islands. So one island is what I call your comprehensive financial ecosystem, right? Everything in your life with a number on it. Right. You can think about, every time you move money around, right? There's accounts, assets, liabilities, real estate, right? Lauren, I know you're a big real estate fan, right? So, understanding, having clarity on all that stuff. But then there's another island, which is you and your family's unique values and your desired outcomes, your objectives. Not just how to do stuff, but why am I actually doing this to begin with? Why do I even care about personal finance? So you have these two islands, and most people, they know a little bit about this island, which is their comprehensive financial situation. They might have been intentional or not intentional in terms of kind of defining their own core values as a family and what's important to them as a family. So the financial plan is really the bridge between the two. So whether you're trying to gain clarity on either side, either island there, or if you're trying to actually align your money with what's important to you and your family, that's really when it makes sense to hire a certified financial planner.
Why do you think financial planners sometimes get a bad rap?
I think it's the terminology. So I love this question. You know, why do you think financial planners, I would actually say financial advisors, you know, get a bad rap more than planners. I think it's actually a common misconception is when I tell somebody I'm a financial planner, they immediately think that I'm going to tell them which stocks and bonds to buy, right? Yeah. You know, which investment should I buy? Where in reality, investments is important, right? Certainly it's important to choose like good investments and low cost investments typically, but that's like 5% of what makes a financial plan work. So I think the bad rap commonly comes from two misconceptions. One, that we only care about investments, and two, that we're just trying to sell you insurance, right? I think the financial advice industry is still very much like, it's kind of like going to imagine going to a Ford dealership and saying, hey, like, you know, do you think I should buy a car? Right. They're like, absolutely. And you should buy a Ford. Right. So, you know, if you're actually working with a financial planner, you know, somebody who's not, you know, not selling you products or investments and also isn't incentivized to manage your money for you, which is very much the typical model. You know, financial planner should really be there to not be the hero of the story, but be the guide. Really the bad rap comes from primarily how we're compensated and incentivized, not actually based on the services we provide and how valuable those services are.
Do financial advisors do financial planning?
It sounds like a funny question, but there are a lot of people who call themselves financial planners who actually do not provide financial planning services. And that's one of the kind of the issues with the industry is, whether you call yourself a financial planner or financial advisor, those are not regulated terms. So, you know, somebody who's never, you know, doesn't have the education, exam, experience to call themselves anything can say they're a financial planner, can say they're a financial advisor. You know, there's an extra level of, you know, regulation around being able to give financial advice for compensation. But, you know, that even the exam to be able to give advice like that is, you know, it only takes maybe like a month or two to study for. You don't really need that much education or knowledge. So yeah, that most financial planners, people who call themselves financial planners, like we'd hope that they do financial planning, but you really have to go kind of under the hood in a way and start asking your financial advisors better questions to realize, do you actually provide the service that I'm actually looking for?
So it's clear on your website, you're very pro DIY, do it yourself, investing. But isn't there like a rub there with what you do? Like if everybody's DIYing, like, do you not have a job?
Right. It's like, it's kind of like, you know, I've heard therapists say in the past, like my goal is to, you know, for clients to not hire me moving forward, right? That they don't need me moving forward. And people ask me all the time, like, you know, hey, like you're a financial advisor who serves DIY clients who, you know, DIY investors, especially the ones I serve they're actually typically anti-advisor. So like, why are you an advisor serving people who hate advisors? And what they don't realize is that investment management is really the part that they do themselves, right? When I say DIY, I mean, you have the time, the temperament, and the talent to click buttons, like to manage your own investments. And a lot of advisors who say that DIY investors can't manage their money successfully don't realize that you can buy ETFs, mutual funds, stocks, bonds, like on your phone. And, you know, you can manage your own investments successfully within like 30 minutes per year. Whereas in the past, you used to actually have like a broker, like, you know, purchase, you know, selling, you know, trading securities for you. So I think it comes from, you know, there's misconceptions from the consumer side, but even advisors don't understand like, hey, you know, hey, DIY investors will inevitably fail if they try to do it themselves. But anybody who's not working with a financial advisor is a DIY investor. So it's definitely a blue ocean. I got to a point as a financial planner, the demand for financial planning from DIY investors is so high. I've actually referred away over 1,000 people in the last 2 years who cannot find somebody who will provide financial advice without, you know, requiring them to manage their money for them. So there's a huge demand, not very much supply. And I think over the next 5-10 years, this will become a lot more normalized.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. Even knowing as much as I know about personal finance, which I'm not like a crazy expert, but I'm sure I know more than most people, there are situations where I would need to get advice on certain things because it's a whole picture. I mean, there's saving and budgeting and managing your like day-to-day finances. There's your investments. There's so many subcategories of investments. There's retirement planning. There's estate planning. There's taxes. I mean, there's so much that goes into your whole financial life that the idea that you can DIY every single bit of it, I think is silly. And I hope we get to this middle ground, because I think on the consumer side, there's reticence to do it. Maybe they've met a lot of advisors that have left a bad taste in their mouth. And then on the advising side, same thing. They're like, well, I don't want to deal with you because you don't want me to manage your Roth IRA or whatever.
Right. Right. And yeah, there's a, where does it go? The thought just fell out of my head as soon as I was thinking about it. Oh, but it was, there's this idea of, you know, it's not just, you know, when I talk about time, temperament, and talent, right? You think about, there's a common misconception that it takes a lot of time to manage your investments successfully. And there's a big misconception that it takes a lot of talent. But even with that, even if you get like all the education, you learn about how all these topics work together, we all have these things called blind spots, right? And you think about, why do they call it a blind spot? You cannot see it. So most of the clients, you know, families who have hired me for financial planning, they have the time, temperament, talent. Like they have tons. They know more than most advisors do, right? They're reading the blogs and listening to your podcast, right? But the number one phrase they say is, I don't know what I don't know. Like, I think I'm doing everything right, but I would love to hire you to help me measure twice, right? Which is the name of my brand. I want you to help me measure twice before making this really important financial decision, which is typically, hey, we're about to retire. Like, have we, you know, are our numbers correct? And have we made the correct assumptions moving into this important decision?
That is huge. And I do love the name of your brand for that reason. And I'm glad to hear about this shift, because I think even 5 years ago, this wasn't happening. We didn't have these DIY people willing to seek advice, and we didn't have people willing to take them on. So I think that's amazing. But how do you know, like, let's say someone's listening right now and they're like, well, do I have the time, talent, temperament? How do you know if you can DIY this thing?
Yeah, I think you would first start with asking yourself, how much time do I assume it takes to manage my money successfully? And I would tell you that if you think it takes more than 30 minutes twice a year to manage your investments, then there's an opportunity to be educated, to receive not necessarily personalized advice, but maybe just more general education about personal finance overall, which is why you're listening to this podcast probably to begin with. It's just to learn more and, you know, to kind of tighten your knowledge. So time is really, I always say it's more of a misconception. It doesn't require that much time to manage. And I need to back up here that the financial planning process, a lot of us think that financial planning is implementing things, is buying and selling securities, buying insurance. But implementation is just one of, like, it's just part of the process. I actually think the most underappreciated part of the financial planning process is what I call the data gathering or data organization process. I always say, my phrase is, clarity precedes confidence. You know, before you can have confidence to implement your financial decisions, you first have to have clarity around, first of all, like, what do you have? What are your unique opportunities? But then also, you know, having the clarity to say, how much time will this take? Right. Once you have clarity, then at that point, I do think that's when you have the talent, you know, to do the thing. But yeah, I think just understanding, just asking yourself the question, how much time do I assume this takes? How much talent do I assume this requires? And then temperament, I think temperament's the hard part. Temperament's really the behavioral emotional part that cannot be quantified. Like, you cannot put that in a spreadsheet. So if you're the type of person who you get really nervous every time you buy something or sell something, or you hear something on the news, and it, like, especially toward investments, right? It's like if the stock market's down, you don't order dessert at the restaurant. Like, that type of behavioral element, like, that's another reason to hire a financial planner.
The temperament is huge. I have heard of many people who are very smart, know a lot about this stuff, and still make huge behavioral mistakes, such as before an election, getting squirrely and selling your stocks, and then the stock market going up and buying back in and realizing that was a $100,000 mistake. Some people need someone between them and those bad decisions to at least talk them through it. I mean, truly.
Yeah. And if you've ever heard of Carl Richards, who wrote a book called The Behavior Gap, which is especially like really that financial advisor, like, I don't think that you should hire a financial planner or financial advisor just to kind of be a barrier between you and your money. I don't think that's how I really think about it. You know, I know you didn't mention that either, but the idea of kind of somebody being in between you and bad decisions to say, hey, like, as a reminder, this is what's important. Like, this is what you told me was important to you.
Right.
And I think from a cognitive behavioral standpoint, I love the psychology of this stuff. There's the idea of short-term benefits and long-term consequences. I think a lot of times because we're focused on like dopamine and like the short term, like we're like, hey, like what can I do in the short term to make me feel better? But then we don't think about what are the long-term consequences of making this, of receiving the short-term benefit.
So you mentioned data gathering. What kind of documents and what kind of data should people be thinking about gathering together?
Well, for your listeners, I've actually created a whole landing page. It's called measuretwicemoney.com/adulting, lowercase. It's so measuretwicemoney.com/adulting. I'm sure you'll put that in the show notes. I've actually included, I call it my data gathering checklist. It's a list of between, most families have between like 40 to 50 financial documents. And you're like, I can't even think of that many, right? But it's, you know, investment statements, real estate information, liabilities, income, expenses, insurance, employee benefits, tax returns, estate documents. So, you know, if you go to that website, there's a whole list of all the documents, and really you won't have clarity over your financial situation and the confidence to move forward until you actually understand like what I call everything in your life with a number on it. So that page will give you kind of the insights of, hey, all these financial documents, yes, there's numbers on them, but financial documents also tell a story about you and your family. There are so many times when I review a credit card statement, and sometimes I'll identify something that the family values that they haven't really intentionally thought about before. They're like, wow, like, how did you know that? Like, have you been spying on us? How do you know that about our family? I'm like, oh, it's on your credit card statement that every Friday you eat at this Mexican restaurant and you pay the same amount every time you go, which means you probably both order the same thing every time. You like consistency. You like structure, and you value that time together every Friday night. And they're like, wow, like, I didn't realize that a credit card statement could actually tell you about what we value.
Yeah, that's amazing. If somebody did that to me, it would be like, you love pancakes or something. Like, you love Saturday morning breakfast at this place called Hotcakes.
You know, oh, that's amazing.
That's my husband. My husband values that. So I think the reason I asked about the data gathering, and I did not know you had created that, so that's amazing, is because whether you're going to DIY this thing or whether you're going to get full-on help, you're going to need all of that stuff either way. So it's almost like that's something that people can walk away from here doing and then not choose their DIY or not to DIY path.
Yeah. And I'll add to that, you know, DIY, we talk about, you know, the do it yourself doesn't necessarily have to do it alone.
Sure.
When I use the term DIY, I think, you know, we don't really think about this term as much, but when I think DIY, that means the doing is done yourself, the implementation part, the doing. But the knowing doesn't have to be done yourself. And also, you know, all of us have this idea of value of, do I spend my time or my money on something?
Yeah.
And I think that working with a financial planner doesn't have to be all or nothing. Like, rather than spending my time, I'm just going to hand it all over and have them do it for me. In reality, a financial advisor, the only thing they can do for you possibly is trade investments or, like, you know, have you, you know, buy an insurance product. They can't help you spend. They can't help you give. They can't help you spend more of your time on the things that are, you know, the things that you claim are valuable to you. So the doing, actually, most of it has to be done yourself, but it's really the knowing what to do, how to do it, when to do it, how to do it, all those things. That's where the financial planner comes in.
How do you keep from getting overwhelmed with this stuff?
Just the love. I think, to me, I have a genuine curiosity for people. Sometimes I probably spend a lot of time in financial planning, kind of almost doing things for me more than doing things for them, but always finding an opportunity to have deeper conversations. I think one of the most kind of undervalued part of the financial planning process is having deeper conversations that have nothing to do with money. For example, so Lauren, if I were to ask you, so you said that your husband really values hotcakes, right? You know, like that the pancakes, like, if on a scale from a 1 to 10, how much does your husband value that purchase?
The purchase itself, it really is
Oh, well, take out the money though. Take out the money. Yeah. Just the how much does he value the experience of going?
Yeah, that's the whole thing, right? It's walking to the restaurant. It's playing pickleball before that and being super hungry. It's not having to cook breakfast, not having to clean it up. So it's like
amazing.
A 10 out of 10. Like if he amazing. Was unable to go out to breakfast once a week, that would really bump him out.
Yeah, what's incredible about that is if I were to say, you know, what's your husband's name?
Eric.
So if I were to ask Eric, like, if I were to show him, like, on the credit card statement, like, all the hotcakes transactions with the amount of money spent, the answer might be different. The answer might be like, oh, like, wow, I didn't realize that it's, like, I should probably spend less money there. Like, we should, so, you know, I think about these conversations. I love to talk about money, like, or talk about, you know, money, quote unquote, but completely taking the money out of the situation. So let's just talk about hotcakes and pancakes for a moment. And what's cool is that when you bring money back into the conversation, I immediately know as a financial planner, not to mention anything about, hey, I think you could possibly spend less money at this place. Like I'd actually try to find a way for you to spend more money getting hotcakes and, you know, spend more time as a family doing, you know, playing pickleball and stuff. So that, and then, you know, reducing expenses on other things that you don't value as much. So yeah, what I love about it is helping families understand that financial planning has very little to do with money. I mean, I have a trademark called Keep Finance Personal, because when we talk about personal finance, there's a lot of one size fits all and rules of thumb. You know, I would say one size fits all that hardly fits anyone. Where in reality, personal finance, we should always start with the personal side and then add the finance in, rather than going finance and then trying to fit our life somehow into our money.
That makes so much sense. And I think as listeners are going through this data gathering, they're going to have some of these aha moments about their own values. It seems inevitable. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think, like, I get excited about social security statements and tax returns, not because of the numbers. Like, I love, you know, yes, I love the spreadsheet numbers, but I feel like I call myself a forensic accountant for good. It's like, you know, usually a forensic accountant's looking for, like, illegal transactions, but I'm always looking for opportunities to help people realize, hey, like, we value experiences and creating memories as a family. We don't really care about the thing. We care about what the thing provides to our lives.
And what I'll add to that is, I think in society, at least for, you know, the millennial generation, and I'm sure Gen Z, my sister's generation, they are very big on experiences over things. But I also want to say, if you value things, there are people in my life that could not care less about going on a cruise or going on a vacation a steak dinner or something. Like, and that's okay. It's okay to value. It's okay to be like, you know what I like? I like nice cars. I like watches. I like jewelry. I like purses, whatever. That sounds like some song or something. But if those are the things that you like, that's also okay. All right. Like, don't feel weird just because, like, experiences happen to be my thing. But let's say, like, they're not. That's cool too. The point is, whatever you value, let's tailor your finances to that, rather than don't take what society tells you should value and then try to like shoehorn that in.
And I'll add to that, like, kind of, you know, we've talked about time, temperament, talent. There's also these three things, which is, how do you spend your time, your energy, and your financial resources in alignment with what really matters to you? So just like you said, like, I do not like travel. Like, I get anxiety when I travel. Like, I don't like being, like, in enclosed spaces for very long, like on, you know, cars or planes. But not only is it that I don't spend money on those things, but a lot of the things that I do enjoy that provide value to me don't cost money. And that's okay too. Like, if I love going on long walks, that, you know, like, I don't have to, you know, buy a membership to a country club to go on a walk. Like, I could if I wanted to, but I just like this idea of saying, what do I value? I value walks, or I value working out. Like, well, how can my time and energy and financial resources, like, help, like, exemplify or, like, support that value? So if I love working out, like, maybe I'm more willing to spend money on, like, a personal trainer rather than going, like, the cheapest gym in town. Right. So I think when you put your values in order, like the things that you value and what provides joy, it's kind of like, have you ever heard of Marie Kondo? Like, does this spark joy? Right. Yeah. So if you looked at your transactions without looking at the numbers and said, like, does this spark joy? Then spend more money on that thing. And then the things that don't spark joy, maybe there's an opportunity to spend less on that.
I love that. So I think that will conclude my questions, except is there anything else you'd like to add, Cody, before we wrap up?
Yeah. So since we've been talking about kind of the non-financial stuff, which is my favorite, I do want to remind everybody that I talk about financial stuff all the time. You know, personal finance like is my thing. With that said, I tell every person I meet that your physical health, your mental health, your spiritual practices, your relationships, and your finances are interconnected. I think a lot of us, we kind of, if you think about all those in a pie, we often just focus on one slice at a time. Like, for example, when I meet with people, they're really focused on the finances. They're focused on spending less, making more, right? Like, you know, getting that third door or fourth door or fifth door, right, in real estate. But they get really focused on the money. They get to a place where they have all the money in the world. They have all the money they could ever need or spend. But then they turn around and their physical health is gone. Their mental health is a wreck. They have so much anxiety about their money because they haven't been, you know, mindful about how they're spending it and saving it. But their spiritual practices, they're like, you know, like the only thing they believe in at that point is money, maybe, right? And then the relationships, they have all this money, but nobody to share it with because they've put all those other things, physical, mental, spiritual relationships on the back burner that their finances, again, as we said, your finances are supposed to support your life, not the other way around. So don't lose your life on the way to finances.
That's great. Can you let people know how to get in touch with you?
Sure. So two places primarily. I am on Twitter, also called X, twitter.com, measure twice MNY. Money was too long. So measure twice MNY is that username. And then measuretwicemoney.com is the best place to get free education. And I'm also releasing a 5-hour video course on how to create your own financial plan on March 1st. So by the time you listen to this, it might be available. So yeah, go ahead and get as much free education as possible, go beyond the basics and start thinking more personally about finance.
And I'll add that landing page in there as well. You guys can follow me on Twitter, X, at Adulting is Easy, Instagram at Adulting is Easy Real. This will be on YouTube at Adulting is Easy as well. If you like this episode, you may also like episode 149, Personal Finance is Personal with Mark Rusin, or episode 131, Budgeting for Dummies. Thanks again for listening, everybody. Hopefully, Cody and I have made adulting a little easier for you.